committed to promoting healthy families and good nutrition, on the web at metlife.org. From Plowshares Fund, dedicated to helping build a safe, secure, and nuclear weapon-free world at plowshares.org. From the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. And from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. International news changes too rapidly to wait for the Sunday talk shows. Get insight and analysis from top journalists on the week's most important stories before the weekend. Join us for the Friday News Roundup.
The Diane Rehm Show is made possible on 90.1 by your membership and by the Carmel Redevelopment Commission, presenting IU Health North Hospital, Rock the District, and Gallery Walk this Saturday in the Carmel Arts and Design District. Schedules and information at carmelartsanddesign.com. Find out what's happening in arts and culture in Central Indiana this weekend on The Art of the Matter, right here on 90.1. Friday evenings at 8 and Saturday afternoons at 4. Made possible by listeners like you, with major support by the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting its inaugural season through June. Donors to the WFYI Sound Vision Society make significant gifts to public broadcasting and receive special benefits. For more information, call 636-2020. It's 79 degrees with overcast skies. You're listening to WFYI 90.1 FM and HD1, Indianapolis. And from the campuses of Franklin and Wabash Colleges, WFCI 89.5 FM Franklin and WNDY 91.3 FM in Crawfordsville. It's high noon.
I'm John Kroll. Coming up on No Limits, we're going to talk about social media and the workplace. As the turmoil surrounding New York Congressman Anthony Weiner demonstrates, the things people put on Facebook and Twitter aren't necessarily private. What you post and what you tweet can come back to haunt you and your job. We're going to talk about the do's and don'ts of safe social media today with our guests, Gary Roberts, the Dean of the IU School of Law in Indianapolis, Indianapolis attorneys Jeff Lohman and Jan Michelson, and of course you. You can join the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending comments or questions via Facebook and Twitter at WFYI. We look forward to talking with you. First, this news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. CIA Chief Leon Panetta says the U.S. should keep troops in Iraq past the 2011 deadline set for U.S. forces to withdraw if the Iraqi government requests it. Panetta spoke during a Senate hearing on his nomination to serve as the next Secretary of Defense.
If confirmed, my number one job will be to ensure that America continues to have the best trained, the best equipped, and the strongest military in the world, in order to make sure that we protect our country.
The head of NATO says he firmly believes Afghanistan's security will not get worse when American troops start leaving next month from that country. And Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen says the U.S.'s allies will still be there. Earlier, Germany urged the U.S. not to withdraw too many troops from Afghanistan in July. President Obama has not yet disclosed how many troops he plans to pull out this summer. Vice President Biden and top congressional lawmakers are resuming talks on raising the government's debt ceiling. NPR's Giles Snyder reports pressure is growing as the August 2nd deadline looms to keep the government out of default.
Lawmakers on both sides worry that time is running short. The Fitch Credit Rating Agency is the latest to warn that it could consider cutting the U.S.'s rating if there's no progress by early August. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney says all sides know the government needs the power to continue borrowing.
This is not about additional spending. This is about honoring the obligations that the United States government has made, and the consequences of not raising the debt ceiling, as some of these rating agencies have suggested, would be severe.
Republicans are demanding spending cuts before the debt limit is raised. Democrats warn if they're too big and come too soon, the economic recovery could be harmed. Giles Snyder, NPR News, Washington.
The latest snapshot of the U.S. trade deficit shows the gap narrowing in April by 6.7% to just under $44 billion. U.S. companies sold more heavy machinery, computers, and telecommunications equipment overseas, which drove exports up to a record level, and imports from Japan fell more than 25% after its recent earthquake and tsunami. A much different picture in the U.S.'s trade deficit with China, which has grown 19.4%. The number of people filing for unemployment for the first time remains high. It's still hovering around 430,000. The Labor Department's four-week average, a less volatile measure, has dropped again, though, to 424,000. That level is still higher than it was earlier in the year, reflecting a slowdown in the jobs market. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow was up 66 points at 12,115, and the Nasdaq had gained 12. It's at 2,687. You're listening to NPR News.
Good afternoon. I'm Sharon Allseth with WFYI News. Police and volunteers in the Bloomington area are searching beyond city limits now for missing IU student Lauren Spearer. Bloomington Police Lieutenant Bill Parker says officers have searched some areas near the 20-year-old's apartment complex several times since she was last seen at 4:30 a.m. Friday. Parker says Spear shows no sign she was being coerced in surveillance video of her and a friend entering and leaving the apartment complex shortly before 3 a.m. Authorities say a woman has confessed to setting the fire that destroyed an apartment building this week in Marion, where about 200 people lived. Marion Fire Chief says the woman lived in the building and said she was upset with someone. She's been taken to a mental health facility. No injuries reported in the fire. Wildlife officials say they believe recent storms and heat killed more than 1,000 fish at an eastern Indiana lake. The fish were spotted floating or washed up on the banks of Middle Fork Reservoir near Richmond beginning Sunday. Indiana American Water Company says tests found no problems with the reservoir's water and that the company would continue to monitor the lake. Governor Mitch Daniels has requested federal assistance for 45 counties that were hard hit by severe weather that rocked southern Indiana this spring. The request is prompted by damage caused by flooding, tornadoes, and straight-line winds. Partly sunny this afternoon with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high near 90. For WFYI News, I'm Sharon Allseth. Stay tuned for No Limits, where we're talking today about the effects of social media on labor law and employment. We'll take your calls at 1-866-476-3881 or send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about the effects of social media and the workplace. We're fortunate to have as our guests IU Indianapolis Law School Dean Gary Roberts. Gary, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much.
Good to have you here. Indianapolis attorney Jeff Lohman. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon.
Good to have you here. And another Indianapolis attorney, Jan Michelson. Jan, it's a pleasure to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
We're talking about, and I suspect this is going to be a show where a lot of people are going to want to call in, given the news surrounding social media in the past few days. So I'm going to toss out the toll-free number again. It's 1-866-476-3881. You can also send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or given there's a certain irony, given the theme of the show, you can send us comments or questions via Facebook or Twitter. At WFYI, what do people need to know about what they post on Facebook or what they tweet? Obviously, we've gotten a huge news hook for this program with New York Congressman Anthony Weiner's indiscretions of the past few weeks and that all the news surrounding that. But that's almost like a warning signal about what can come back to haunt you. Jeff Lohman, what do people need to realize, at least when in relation to their jobs and their careers, with Facebook and Twitter and other social media outlets?
Well, the very first thing that they have to realize is that pretty much everything you put on Facebook and Twitter is in the public domain. Obviously, you can create settings on those programs that limit the access to the public, but generally speaking, people don't always do that. And so anytime you put that information out there, it's going to the world at large. And that's particularly important in the employment context, not just in terms of getting hired by employees, but in terms of your day-to-day relationships with employers.
Jan Michelson, what do they need to know? What do people need to know?
Well, I think that what Jeff said is correct, that and that warning has been given, you know, over the years. It was given back when we were talking about email, and people had to understand that, you know, what you send in email, you cannot delete, and it's going to exist there forever. People didn't seem to take that warning, and I'm wondering whether they take this warning either, but maybe some of the current news stories will have that impact. But the interesting thing is most employers are monitoring what their employees are doing on social media, yet most employees either think that employers don't have a right to do that or seem to ignore the fact that they, in fact, are monitoring. So people, I think, realize the risk but must, for some reason, be willing to take it. And the risks to employees are very great.
What are some of those risks?
Well, the thing about social media is it really touches every aspect of the employment relationship. As Jeff said, it occurs before you get hired, when you're an applicant and you're being vetted through social media. It occurs while you're an employee and you're being non-productive or you're doing things that are illegal via social media. And it causes you to get fired for things that you do on social media. So you can risk not being hired at all, and you can risk being fired once you have a job. And there are hundreds, literally hundreds of cases where employees have been terminated for something they did on social media.
Could you give us a couple of examples? And then I will find a way to pull Gary Roberts into this conversation in a moment, but I think that what you're saying here is important.
Sure. One of my favorites is, I think this might have been out of the United Kingdom, but an employee who had friended her boss but apparently forgot that she friended her boss.
Mm-hmm.
And she sent a long email, OMG, my boss is, and she used various other terms I won't use on the radio.
Yeah.
But
thank you for
terrible
that.
Things about her boss, forgetting that she had friended him. So, of course, he read that, and he sent her one note back and said, I guess you forgot that you friended me. You're fired. Another case... This was an applicant, but somebody was applying to Cisco and had just gotten a job offer and basically said, well, I just got this job offer. Now I have to, like, weigh the risk of taking it and making some money, fat paycheck, but hating the work. And somebody that already worked at Cisco said, you know, we read these things, and I'm sure they'll be glad to know that you think this is going to be a boring job. And his job offer was rescinded.
Gary Roberts, how much time and energy do you think employers spend monitoring those sorts of sites? Is it something they pay attention to?
I think it depends on the employer. At Indiana University, I don't think there's anybody sitting around monitoring what people send out over the emails. But, you know, even taking what Jan and Jeff have said one step further, there are many employers who absolutely prohibit you from using social media if the equipment you're using it on belongs to the employer. So using a computer or a cell phone or whatever that the employer has paid for, or if you're using work time to you know, play on Facebook or tweet or whatever it is you do. So people just need to be really aware that when they're on the job or if they have equipment that is paid for by the employer, they should avoid going on social media. So it's not just the content of what you put on social media. It's the fact that you're using time that you should be working in the first place.
There are a couple of, it seems to me there are a couple of different directions we could go here. First, I'd sort of, because I think we all understand the reasons why employers assert the right they have to, you know, to monitor what you're doing in the workplace. And I think Gary Roberts just sort of articulated that if they've bought the equipment and frankly, they're paying for your time during that period. What is the argument for being able to monitor what you've said on Facebook, the legal argument, before you're even an employee, or if you're posting stuff on your own time? Jeff Lohman.
Well, typically, I'm actually involved in the business of representing employees and unions, and so I'm probably lean more on the side of, I guess you could argue that that sort of thing shouldn't be as pertinent, but the fact is that it is pertinent, and so I think that it's pertinent from the standpoint of the employer. From a legal perspective, when you're an applicant for employment, your rights are slightly more limited than they are when you're an actual employee of the company. And when you become an employee of the company, there are a host of legal issues that get raised that are different with respect to you being able to do those sorts of things.
Jan Michelson, what sorts of things? It sounds like you've actually built a small dossier on this. What sorts of things should people not post or you know, put out there, in effect?
Anything that they wouldn't want their boss or future boss to see. And that's a problem for a lot of young people because they apparently are not thinking ahead in terms of the fact that those things are permanent, digitally permanent. I have read some things where individuals are going as far as changing their names because it's the only way they can disassociate themselves from postings that they made when they were crazy and 18. But employers are checking applicants even before interviews, sometimes after interviews. And there is, and for good reason, one is that employees lie a lot on mm-hmm. resumes about their jobs, about their experience. And so it's a good way to get information. So things like that employee disparaging their former employer, okay? Mm-hmm. An employer sees that, and it's like if they did it to them, they're going to do it to us. Things that have to do with drugs or drinking, you know, those kinds of things. To check academic credentials, those kinds of things. Some employers even look at it to look at writing style. And to get some sense of personality.
Man, that's frightening.
Right. And so all of those yeah. things, whatever they want to consider in terms of deciding whether you'd be a good fit for the company. Now, apparently, on the other hand, but it's a much smaller percentage, people have actually been inspired to hire somebody based on what they saw on their webpage because it was either creative or it was some other way positive. But that is a lot less. And more and more employers are vetting candidates through social media, and I would guess in a few years it's going to be everybody.
Almost everybody. So you would go ahead.
And I would assume from a legal standpoint that when many employers now, when you apply for the job, they require you to waive your right mm-hmm. to any confidentiality so that they can check your Facebook page and whatever else. And if you're not willing to do that, they just won't even consider you.
That's true, and if I could just add to that, one other issue as it pertains to the employment and getting hired process is that it's very difficult to figure out a reason why an employer didn't hire you. They're not always as open about the hiring process and the reasons for rejecting you. It's usually pretty easy to figure out why an employer fired you, but to the extent that they're taking that sort of information into account, you may never know.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit about the elephant in the room right now. We focused on sort of people at the beginning of the career, but, you know, in the case of Anthony Weiner, I mean, we're talking about a man in his middle 40s who clearly had a significant resume, a lot of experience, smart guy from this episode to the contrary, I guess, as evidence to the contrary. You know, how often do we see this where people who should know better have done something this foolish and frankly self-destructive? Jan Michelson.
I don't think it matters, really. Obviously, maybe younger people are not thinking as far ahead and are more attuned to that. But actually, one of the, for example, greatest most growing groups in terms of people on social media is women over 40 or over 50, I think. And so this is not just a teenager kind of thing anymore, and it is really everybody. We saw some of the same things with Tiger Woods and some other politicians, and so this is not anything new. And, again, apparently it is just difficult for people to, maybe think they're going to get caught or think it's going to be happening to them.
Well, and I guess the other issue, too, is, and I find, I'm, in the interest of full disclosure, I have a Facebook page. I had to be educated when I started this show that you don't call them Twitters, you call them tweets. So I'm not familiar with that part of social media, but I'm amazed, and I think Gary Roberts touched on this point early on about the amount of time they can just consume. I was going to use suck up, but it really, how it just disappears. Is that an issue for employers too? Is that they're worried about just the sheer amount of time that's going to be consumed by these sites?
These things can become addictive. Mm-hmm. And I actually have known some people who literally can spend 8-10 hours a day playing with their Facebook pages. It's shocking. But I guess people get sucked into it, and they just get caught up and can't put it down. So, yeah, it becomes a problem at work. I mean, the NCAA basketball pool pales in comparison to the amount of time that people waste on doing their tweets and their Facebook stuff.
Difference is I get the NCAA basketball pool. I'm not sure I get this. We are talking about the effects of social media on the workplace and employment practices. We're fortunate to have as our guest today IU Indianapolis Law School Dean Gary Roberts and Indianapolis attorneys Jeff Lohman and Jan Michelson. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible on 90.1 by your membership and by the Carmel Redevelopment Commission, presenting IU Health North Hospital, Rock the District, and Gallery Walk on Saturday in the Carmel Arts and Design District. Schedules and information at carmelartsanddesign.com. By Terry Lee Honda Service in Avon, featuring factory techs with 29 bays for all warranty work, plus an area for family waiting. That's TLC, the Terry Lee Commitment. More at terryleehonda.com. And by Jameson Camp and Retreat Center, a camp and a year-round youth service provider offering residential summer camp, outdoor education, and youth leadership. More information at jamesoncamp.org. Expect partly sunny skies this afternoon with a 50-50 chance of showers and thunderstorms, a high reaching 90 degrees. Mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight and tomorrow. Expected overnight low of 70 degrees and tomorrow's high reaching 90 degrees. It's currently 81 degrees with overcast skies. You're listening to WFYI 90.1 FM and HD1, Indianapolis, for your information.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking today about social media and the workplace. We have as our guests IU Indianapolis Law School Dean Gary Roberts, Indianapolis attorneys Jan Michelson and Jeff Lohman. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We're talking about social media, and I guess I want to – we've talked about the fact that this stuff is monitored and that you should assume – it's sort of like, you know, that you're taught when you go into this business that you should always assume that every microphone is live, we're dealing with some of the same issues here, that when you're dealing with social media, you just have to assume that everyone, including people you don't want, are going to be able to see the things that you post or have access to them. Suppose you're 27 years old and you've matured a bit, but you know that there is a post out there that you did when you were 19 and incapacitated in some fashion. What steps can you take to try to mitigate the damage at that point, say with a potential employer? Do you acknowledge it up front? Do you say, look, I know you're going to search, there's something out there you need to know about? Are you proactive? Or do you wait to have some sort of answer when it comes back. Jeff Lohman, what do you counsel? It sounds like you work that side of the question.
Right. You know, I think that is a question that would completely depend upon the circumstances. It would depend upon the severity of the comment. It would depend upon where you're trying to get hired. I mean, sometimes it's best when approaching an employer not to, I mean, certainly I would never counsel someone to proactively tell an untruth with respect to their situation, but sometimes it's best just to leave that out there and hope for the best. But there may certainly be circumstances in which something is so severe and so directly related to what it is that you're trying to do that you might want to get out in front of that. But frankly, to the extent you walk into an employer and you're having to get out in front of something, particularly in today's job environment, that does not bode well for your chances of being hired.
Well, let me give a specific. I'm going to alter some of the terms here a little bit so that the person can't be identified. And I'm going to have to do that kind of on the fly. So a few years ago when Facebook really first started to emerge, several of my students, actually a couple of the editors of the student newspaper at Franklin College, came to me and said they wanted to do a story about the fact that employers were looking and monitoring Facebook sites. And at the time, I wasn't on Facebook at all. So they showed me, had to show me how to, you know, how to set up a Facebook account and all of that sort of stuff, which I did. And, of course, I just went and looked at their pages and thought, okay, this is pretty innocuous. But, you know, it looked to me like an updated high school yearbook, by and large, at that stage. And, you know, I thought, I don't quite get what the big deal is here. Then I realized the flaw in my thinking is that I was looking at two, you know, highly motivated, very disciplined students who did get the stuff. The fact that they came to me with the story established that. So I thought, I was teaching also a U.S. history survey class at that point. I pulled my grade book out, started pulling names at random, and pulled up name of one young woman, went to her Facebook page, and this was right before spring break, and she'd announced on one of her wall postings that she was, I think, headed down to one of the islands and that her goal for the next week was to get drunk every night and sleep with as many guys as possible during that time. And I thought, oh, boy, that's something that will come back to haunt you, you know, in a very short period of time here. Using that set of circumstances where, you know, young, not particular, you know, it was not a smart thing to do, but what's the counsel there? And I guess the other way I'd toss this question around is, do employers, you know, take into account that people do, we hope, Anthony Weiner seemingly to the contrary, get smarter as we get older, or at least get wiser? Jeff Lohman, what would you counsel that young woman if she were standing before you?
The very first thing I would counsel her to do is shut down her Facebook account, never get on that account again. And the other thing, certainly, if she didn't want to shut down her Facebook account, is get that post off. Obviously, there are ways that you can go out and get that information off. It is true that once it's out there, if somebody had printed that off or somebody had actually been in the process of taking it down, it's going to be on paper somewhere forever. But there are certainly steps that you can take to mitigate those circumstances.
Gary Roberts, yes.
The issue you're raising really isn't a legal issue. It's mm-hmm. just a judgment issue, and I think every circumstance is different. It depends on what you're saying or what you're doing. Sexually explicit references sometimes tend to trigger a different set of responses from an employer than some comment that maybe you've done something illegal or some attitude you have about that employer's business or that employer's industry. It also depends on whether it was 10 years ago or 6 months ago. You asked me to imagine that I was 27, which is very hard for me to imagine.
But if
it was something that I did, you know, when I was 17, I think most employers are going to be more tolerant of that. It also depends upon whether your employer is, you know, politically more tolerant, lives in the Bay Area, or whether or not it's somebody from rural Indiana. You just have to take into account all the circumstances and make a judgment as to whether or not full disclosure is a smart strategy or whether or not you should just keep your mouth shut.
Are there lines that employers can't cross in in terms of researching this stuff. If you've set up protections and you want to try to keep the stuff private, and you've in effect said you're not using their equipment, you're not using doing this stuff on their time, is there any protection involved in that, Jan Michelson?
Not very much. And there are, for example, employers may go back at some point in later when a lawsuit is filed, for example. I mean, we represent employers, and we always would have our clients try to find out as much as possible about the person's claim and about the person's background. And courts, in some cases, will allow that. They'll say even the non-public information, even the hidden information, may be relevant to this case. And the thing about it is a lot of times it is coworkers who rat people out. It's not the employer who actually is going after the information. So in cases of, you know, where we used to, in workers' comp cases, have a private investigator watching the person to see what it was and whether they were really injured, now it's pretty easy. You can go on Facebook and they'll have pictures of their vacation. There was a case where
if they're water skiing, it's
right,
not a good
right.
sign. Yeah.
There was a case where a woman was off on FMLA leave for depression, and her coworkers sent pictures from her Facebook page of her at a Chippendales show. Now, she later tried to explain that her doctor had told her she should just do things to get her mind off of her depression. But that was the insurance company who saw that and said, why are we paying for somebody that is really not sick?
Mm. We've gotten a couple of tweets. One from a listener by the name of Bill Bean, who wants to know, what about the issue of protected activity with comments in regard to the National Labor Relations Board versus American Medical Response of Connecticut? I see Jan and Jeff nodding their heads, at least in recognition. Jan, what?
Right, and Jeff and I probably come at this from a slightly different perspective.
Well whichever one of you goes first, the other one will get the next word.
There have been, even in the past couple months after that case, a number of similar cases. And basically the question is, if people are making comments, for example, about their work conditions or about their supervisor, which was in that case, is that protected concerted activity, which is protected by the law? And so the question has been, are the company's policies that say you can't say anything bad about the workplace, can you be fired for doing that? Because is that a response to protected concerted activity? And again, in this situation, like these others, it kind of all depends, you know, on what the policy is and what it prohibits. Some of those cases, we haven't been able to find out the real rule because they settled.
Mm-hmm.
But in other kinds of cases, the NLRB has looked at that and said, well, it depends. Was it taken in response to that? Was it truly protected concerted activity? But it has made employers, I think, a little bit cautious and not pulling the trigger maybe quite as fast on terminating somebody for something that was posted if it could be interpreted to be that, and it's making employers look at their policies. We encourage everyone to have a social media policy, but look at what it says and make sure you're not running afoul of the law.
And could we just, this sounds like a pretty important point, could we walk through again real quickly a definition of protected concerted activity? Jeff Lohman.
Certainly.
And then I'll give you a shot too.
Sure. Under the National Labor Relations Act, conduct is protected, or comments that employees make or actions that employees take are protected to the extent that two criteria are met. First, the employees have to be engaged in concerted activity, which basically means that they're acting in conjunction with another coworker or a group of coworkers. To the extent that they're out there airing their own personal grievances or complaints or issues that they have, that's not generally considered concerted activity. And so if you go out and do that, that's not going to be protected under the Act. Now, but if you're doing it in conjunction with one or two other employees, then it can be protected. Now, the second point and the second criteria is whether or not it's protected activity, which means that the issue that you're raising has to relate to your wages, your benefits, your working conditions, or your terms and conditions of employment. So again, if you're out there commenting on in conjunction with two or three other employees about the boss's favorite sports team, and you're criticizing that sports team, then that's not going to be, that may be concerted, but that's not protective because it doesn't deal with your wages and benefits.
We seem to be, not surprisingly, given the focus of this show, getting a fair number of emails and tweets. We've gotten an email from a listener by the name of Don Cummings, and I'm just going to read it. What advice would you give a young person who is always diligent about not posting party pictures, etc., when their friends post them and tag them in those pictures? That's kind of an area we haven't talked about yet in this discussion, is sort of the loss of control. It's not just what you're putting out there, but what other people could be putting out there about you. How do you protect yourself in those regards?
Pick your friends carefully.
Ancient advice, but still valid.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I think the other thing that, you know, maybe is going to be changing is that employers may eventually have to be more tolerant of that because, you know, pretty soon, if in fact we disallow anybody from employment that has never done that, we may be left with a very small applicant pool, you know, because things are changing. And so that may, just like, you know, there used to be rules about people having tattoos, for example. I mean, that's going to be almost impossible when, you know, 80% of people over the age of, you know, 22 have a tattoo. So I think, you know, they're going to have to take that perspective perhaps, and maybe in those cases where it has been somebody else. But I'm not sure you can control, like Gary said, you know, I'm not sure you can control that. Or, as, you know, Congressman Weiner said, you know, somebody hacking into your account and sharing that information. If that's
well, can I just,
go ahead, Gary,
I think one thing that we have to realize in our modern society is that privacy means something very different today than it used to. There's just not a lot you can get away with when you're not in your own home that's not at risk of being plastered up somewhere. There's cameras on street corners checking who's riding in your car and whether you're running stoplights. We got surveillance cameras in shopping malls and on streets all over the place. And to some extent, I think employers, Jan's right, employers are going to have to learn that everybody's probably done some embarrassing things in their life. And you know, if you get caught drinking a little too much sometime or making funny faces or doing things that you shouldn't have, that they're just going to have to accept that everybody probably does that once in a while. But on the other hand, I think people need to realize that in the past, you could do some really bad things and get away with it because nobody would know.
Or people would forget.
You know, in this day and age with surveillance cameras and Facebook pages and, you know, little pocket cameras and everything, you're at risk of anything you do being exposed. And people are going to have to, I think, maybe behave a little better, or be aware of what they're doing when they're out in public.
Well, I know that the former executive director of the National American Civil Liberties Union, Ira Glasser, did this speech where he said, you know, convenience is the enemy of privacy, and that people don't think that, you know, that like the easy pass and the tollway or whatever establishes where you are at a precise time, that when you use your credit card, you're establishing where you were or at times, and that you don't even think of that we set down trails that we never have before. And it strikes me that that's part of the issue here, too, is mostly, even if you're following a lot of these other rules, I think people make the assumption that if they're, we keep using Facebook as the example here because it's the most prominent one, that if they're on Facebook and they are in the privacy of their own home, it's their time and all of that, that it should be okay. In part because the doors are shut, nobody's there, and they think they're just talking with their friends like they'd be talking on a phone. But that's not the case. And I guess I want to come back and let Jan Michelson take a shot at answering Don Cummings' question as well here, which is, you know, what do you do? Are there ways you can protect yourself? Assume you've chosen your friends unwisely in one occasion. I think we could go around the room and realize that we haven't always been wise in the choices of our friends.
I'm not sure you have a whole lot of options. For example, now on Facebook has a feature where you can download your entire history, you know, your list of friends and all your wall posts and all your photos. And we, for example, when we're defending a lawsuit, always ask a plaintiff and tell them how to do it and say, we want your history, because it, especially if it's going to have information relevant to their claims. And so in terms of the technical issues, I'm not sure how you can do that. And we also find ways to subpoena from those internet service providers and those pages some things that we may not be able to get just by going to the page.
Are there, suppose though, I mean, and do you have legal recourse if somebody posts something maliciously about you? Jeff Lohman.
Well, you do have legal recourse to the extent that they're, you know, posting something that's untruthful or that's an invasion of your privacy. In theory, you can always bring a lawsuit against someone to have that sort of information removed or sue them for damages. But as a practical matter, that's completely impractical because nobody can afford to pay our hourly rates. You know, nobody can afford the litigation expenses. And even if you could get damages from a defendant, in most cases, that person, if they're 23 years old, is probably judgment-proof, so it's not going to do you any good to get that piece of paper saying they owe you a lot of money for invading your privacy.
And in most cases, filing the lawsuit just brings more attention to the thing you don't want attention brought to. Right. So.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking so far about kind of how it hurts the employees, but lots of damage to employers by things that people are posting, terribly embarrassing things. Mm-hmm. Sharing of intellectual property, confidential information. Companies lose all kinds of money. Cyber sabotage, where somebody could, you know, cut down or stop the process. So terrible damage to employers.
We are talking about social media and the workplace. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible on 90.1 by your membership and by Green Bean Delivery, bringing organic produce and natural groceries to the greater Indianapolis area. With a variety of products from Indiana farmers and artisans, you can customize your orders online and receive groceries at your home or office. More at greenbeandelivery.com. By Oliver Winery, growing grapes and making wine since 1972. Offering wine tasting, tour, and picnics for the family, located on State Road 37, 45 minutes south of Indianapolis. For more information, go to oliverwinery.com. And by Indianapolis Downtown Incorporated, featuring shopping, outdoor dining, and concerts. Information at indiedt.com. Downtown Indianapolis. Close to perfect. You're listening to WFYI 90.1 FM and HD1, Indianapolis. For your information.
Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about the effects of social media on the workplace and employment. We're fortunate to have as our guests attorney Jan Michelson, attorney Jeff Lohman, and IU Indianapolis Law School Dean Gary Roberts. We've gotten quite a few questions here via email or Facebook. And I'm going to try to synthesize a couple of them here because they're on a theme. One of them is from Jesse in Indianapolis. Says, I've made my Facebook page completely unsearchable because I have things I don't want strangers seeing. There are, however, several other people with my duplicate name who are less than stellar individuals who are easily searchable. Will employers take the time to make sure they have found the correct person before passing someone over? Also, would someone be chosen again because they apparently have no social media presence? First part of that question, I think, is the what do you do if there's somebody out there who's got the same name that you do and could pop up? I mean, I guess I'd go back to the variation of the question I asked about. Do you try to get ahead of that at the beginning of the interview process? Jeff Lohman?
I think it depends on the circumstances as usual. I think that to the extent that there is a legitimate risk of confusion, then maybe you do want to get ahead of it. But I think the reality is most employers understand that some names are quite common in the world. And although I don't represent employers, I would be surprised if at least sophisticated employers didn't take the time to figure out, you know, whether they're dealing with the correct person or not.
So if there's another Anthony Weiner out there right now, he shouldn't proactively be saying, that's not me.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then the related question here is a tweet from someone with the pseudonym, God Said Ha. Why do people use their real names? Wouldn't an assumed name be better for use in social media? Does that offer you any protection at all? Jan Michelson, you're shaking your head.
I mean, I think people use their real names because, you know, the purpose of social media is these electronic communities. And so if you were not using your full name, people couldn't find you, couldn't connect with you, you couldn't communicate with your friends that way. So it would sort of defeat the purpose in terms of doing that. You know, I know people in chat rooms, for example, which is another kind of aspect of Web 2.0, not just social media, you know, people will use names, which names in themselves tend to be things perhaps that you would not want to be known by. So not sure that that is so better. So I'm not sure that if, in fact, people could identify it with you, and to a certain extent you'd have to allow that, it's not really going to help you. Jeff had said that, you know, and we do advise, Ogletree Deacons does advise employers, and we do warn them if they're going to be using, for example, social media to vet applicants, to realize that it's not that hard to create an online persona, either good or bad, perhaps making you look better than you are. It's not hard to doctor photographs, and other people can do that. So we do warn them that, you know, you got to be careful, and you can't necessarily assume that the information you are getting about that applicant is entirely accurate and does represent them.
We've gotten another email from someone with the email address ppgreit, who makes a point first that the first observation that he or she offers is that probably all of us on this panel are on the wrong side of the digital divide in terms of age, which, frankly, I'll say as the host is probably a valid point. But the second part that they want to deal with, they've got a couple of good questions here. One is whistleblowing. The bad employer often needs to be shown when the emperor is not wearing any clothes. All too often, execs will circle the wagons to protect their bonuses, et cetera, rather than deal with an issue that's bad for the organization. In some ways, this is an issue that we're dealing with in terms of these new media, because the reality is, for as long as people have had bosses, bosses have been complained about. They used to do it at the water cooler. Now they do it on Facebook, or, you know, tweet back and forth, or do whatever. It's only the medium through which they do it that has changed. What accounts for the difference in the responses? I mean, people didn't used to normally get fired. I mean, I've been in the workforce now for more than 30 years, and I can't remember a day of my working life in which somebody didn't complain about a supervisor somewhere.
But they didn't complain to the supervisor about the supervisor.
Right.
And when you put it up on Facebook, it's out there, whereas when you mumble to the co-worker at the water cooler, that's as far as it usually goes.
And is it the fact that it is public, to some degree, public disclosure? I mean, I know my background, obviously, is in journalism, and we teach in our media law that publishing, I mean, technically, by the letter of the law, you're publishing something if you write it on the blackboard. You know, as long as it's something that can be distributed in some way or all of that. Is it the fact that it is public that makes for the distinction here?
If I could respond to that.
Sure.
It really doesn't. The fact that it's public doesn't make a big distinction. It may make a distinction in terms of how the employer finds out about it. It may make a distinction in terms of the employer's anger about it or dislike of it. But the case you made reference to, or we made reference to a little while ago, which was kind of the first major case that came from the National Labor Relations Board involving social media or Facebook involved this situation where an employee went home one day using their own computer and actually made a Facebook post complaining about their supervisor and calling their supervisor a scumbag, at which time a number of coworkers got onto the Facebook page and essentially agreed with those comments. The employer went out and fired this person for having made these comments, and the National Labor Relations Board, or at least their general counsel, took the position that that was in fact protected concerted activity under the National Labor Relations Act, despite the fact that it was in this very public forum because they were making comments about their working conditions, essentially, and that a number of different employees were chiming in with respect to that.
Jen Michelson.
Yeah, I think that it's different mostly because of the vast audience, you know, at the water cooler or even in terms of an email or a memo, it was to a certain number of people. You know, this is going all over the world, and the digital permanency of it, which is different. You know, can't be thrown away, you know, once the water cooler conversation is over. But, you know, the person asked about whistleblowing. I mean, those things still can be done. It just would be that Facebook would not be the appropriate way to do that. You know, nothing is keeping the employee from making those complaints, but there are appropriate ways to do that. And the employer, when these things are being posted around the world forever, they really do have concerns about completely embarrassing situations that could really, in some cases, do serious damage to the brand or the product. If anybody has seen the YouTube disgusting Domino's pizza video, and that was posted that had people doing terrible things to food before delivering it to the mm-hmm. individuals, including sticking cheese up their nose. Mm-hmm. You know, once that was posted and went viral, it eventually got taken down, but Domino's is dealing with the effects of that.
Well, and that raises another issue. I know in the newspaper business, I mean, they've which is the background I have, they've struggled with the idea of these online comment forums and all of that. Basically, initially, they sort of said, well, we're just going to make this an open forum, and we're not going to police it all, and that way we'll say we have no liability. But I think that became too much of a, you know, the Wild West, as it were. And they're now trying to figure out ways in which they can monitor the activity and the conversation there without asserting too much control and therefore assuming liability for whatever gets posted there. It strikes me in some cases, like the example that Jeff Lohman just cited about the employee who went on and called a supervisor a scumbag, you've got to be a little bit careful, I would think, also about defaming people in this, because it does, particularly if something goes viral, and among other things, it's a lot easier to track exactly how many people have seen it now or could have seen it along the way. Is that a concern as well, that you should be careful about the things you say about other people on social media because you expose yourself to defamation charges? Jan Michelson, you're shifting your head back and forth.
Well, defamation is all, you know, there's lots of risks in lots of laws that can be broken, almost every one on social media. And defamation and some other kind of state and common laws are listed. You know, the problem with that, for example, in the scumbag issue is, you know, that individual would not be able to prove defamation because I don't think calling someone a scumbag would be a fact, but rather an opinion, mm-hmm. and therefore wouldn't have a defamation case. So, you know, defamation is very difficult to prove, but somebody that does do that, although I think people that make those kind of postings are really not thinking that far down the line, certainly could be sued for defamation. But again, maybe some of those individuals are going to be pretty judgment proof. unless, and I think there have been cases of kind of business-to-business defamation, you know, where maybe having those posts made about a competitor, and that certainly would be a concern.
Well, and PP Great has one other question, comment, point that we should take. It says, initial adversarial policies by employers will only make matters worse. The pendulum will swing in the opposite direction as employees look for an avenue, increase social media activity, to retaliate, vent, and expose the bad apples. Jeff Lohman, you're nodding your head. Is that an agreement or just acknowledging the point?
Well, I think there's some truth to that, that there could be some backlash. And just as a prime example, I think, let's say an employer develops a policy that's particularly harsh with respect to the use of social media or Twitter as it pertains to employees. In all likelihood, if groups of employees got together and went out in social media or wherever they go and started complaining about that particular policy, suggesting that that policy is overly broad and overly harsh, that itself would be protected activity. So that's something that employees are entitled to comment upon and entitled to express their opinion about. So employers may find themselves in a situation where the very evil they're trying to tamp down is just making the situation worse.
I would like to add, though, that this whole discussion of protected activity is only relevant if you have a union, isn't it? Is that not the case? Can ununionized employees get protection from concerted activity as well?
Yes, they can.
That's a good point to make. I didn't know that.
Okay. What's the argument for that, Jeff Lohman?
Well, under the National Labor Relations Act, it just protects protected concerted activity, which is conversation, which is concerted group activity over wages, benefits, and terms and conditions of employment. And there's this general assumption that that only applies in the union setting because that's typically where the National Labor Relations Act is applied. But take the situation in which you don't have a union yet and you're trying to form and join and organize a union, whether that be a loose association of employees or an actual union, the same sort of comments that employees make outside the union setting, it's basically the same thing that happens in union organizing efforts before you have a union. And so the law protects that.
Jan Michelson.
In terms of, you know, backlash from employees, I think that is true. I mean, we encourage everyone to have a social media policy and to use social media to, you know, to do these kinds of things. But we also warn them that that it can't be bad for morale. You know, there are, for example, monitoring programs. I've gotten ads for monitoring programs that basically for $37 a month, you can track keystrokes. You can have little cameras in everybody's computer so they see exactly what the people are doing 8 hours a day. Ooh. You know, I shared that with my assistant, and she's like, yeah, that's
almost
not
Orwellian.
Not good for morale. The other thing is, you know, you can have a policy, but then you're stuck with, do you have the resources to monitor? Are you going to enforce it consistently? You know, it costs money to be monitoring and reading all those emails, and do you have the staff to do that? You know, are you going to deal with these morale problems? So, it's a catch-22 of sorts. You want to have one, but with having one comes these other sorts of problems, and unless you're going to do it right, like any other kind of policy, if you're going to have one and you're not going to enforce it, or you're going to enforce it inconsistently, you'd be better off not having one at all, because that's going to get you into trouble.
Well, and isn't there an irony here, too, in that that most businesses, organizations, and entities now see as one of the great opportunities for growth using social media to connect with, you know, new markets, new constituencies, whatever term you want to use? Doesn't that make the task of policing all of that stuff, if that's the term, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that term, that much more difficult? Jan Michelson.
Yeah, it is. And actually, a lot of companies encourage employees to do that, to tweet to customers, to do things to increase market share. And those policies have to be particularly well conceived, because they're at the same time encouraging them, but then saying, okay, there's certain rules about this, you know, nothing anonymous. If it's your personal opinion, don't be representing it as that of the company. You know, don't be using your company, you know, email address if it's something that's an individual kind of thing. Don't use any kind of slurs or any kind of inappropriate language, because you are a representative of the company in that way. And so, you know, there's going to be things that they can do. And then, so it's kind of difficult to encourage somebody, but at the same time say, but you got to be careful about all of these kinds of things. And, you know, you want the good things, but not the bad.
I'm afraid that's going to have to be the last word for this program. I'd like to thank my guest today, Gary Roberts, who is the dean of the IU School of Law at Indianapolis, Indianapolis attorney Jan Michelson, Indianapolis attorney Jeff Lohman. Thank you all for joining me. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I've enjoyed this hour. I also would like to thank all of the folks who spent this hour with us, sent in tweets, and I particularly appreciate the sort of sly tribute that they used almost exclusively electronic media to communicate with us this time around. Please join us next week when we have a special program in which we are talking about the challenges of developing an educated workforce here in Indianapolis. I'm John Kroll. Thank you for spending this time with us.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Allseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Matthew Sosi. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.
No Limits is made possible on 90.1 by your membership and by Carmel Redevelopment Commission. Presenting IU Health North Hospital Rock the District and Gallery Walk this Saturday in the Carmel Arts and Design District. Schedules and information at carmelartsanddesign.com.
Save the date for WFYI's Let's Meet PBS Kids in the Park, presented by Marsh and supported by Famous Footwear, Indy's Child, Teachers Credit Union, and Yelp. Join us in downtown Indy Saturday, June 11th at Military Park in White River State Park. Meet the Kratt Brothers and enjoy a fun-filled day of live entertainment, games, your favorite PBS Kids walk-around characters, and more. And thanks to our sponsors, admission is free. To learn more, visit WFYI.org.
You're listening to WFYI 90.1 FM and HD1, Indianapolis. And from the campuses of Franklin and Wabash Colleges, WFCI 89.5 FM Franklin and WNDY 91.3 FM in Crawfordsville. It's 1 o'clock.
Hi, I'm Ros Atkins. Welcome to World Have Your Say, live by the pyramids in Egypt as the world watches Syria.